power, 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 an unfortunate learning opportunity that may help you in the future. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for the download today. I'm here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's also the proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport, and kind of a muckraker at times when it comes to safety issues and the regulatory agencies and sometimes our alphabet groups. Bob, thanks for taking some time out today.
As always, Paul, it's my pleasure.
Now, Bob, you have been uncharacteristically forthright in publicly acknowledging when you do something that you're not proud of or that taught you a lesson. We're going to deal with one of those today. Tell us about the article you wrote in the current edition, the July edition of Over the Airwaves, that was headlined Power, Power, Power.
Power, power, power. Yes, this was a sad day, and every experienced flight instructor has a sad day from time to time. And it would be, as you say, I think unprofessional of me to be critical of my colleagues without at the same time looking at my own performance and behavior as a CFI. And on this particular day, we had an incident that that is replete with lessons to be learned, lessons to be taught. This was to be a routine flight review conducted in a RANS, home-built aircraft, tail dragger, high wing, with a gentleman that is a skilled pilot. Everything appeared to be normal on this particular day, except for the fact that as we were coming in over a 50-foot obstacle to demonstrate a landing on a grass field, what the individual did, rather than allowing the airplane's speed to bleed off a little bit, not having been on this grass field before, he felt compelled, I believe, to put the airplane down as quickly as possible on the sod and get on the brakes. Well, in the process of pushing the stick forward with a little too much airspeed, the airplane quite naturally bounced and ballooned. And it ballooned with a very high nose-up attitude. And I looked at my client, and there wasn't any action being taken on his part. And I said, power, 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 and again, no action taken on his part. And he had his right hand gripped on the throttle. And so what I attempted to do, of course, is to put my hand on the throttle, override his hand, and press the throttle to the wall, lower the nose, and resume flying speed and go around. That was the plan. But on the RANS, like the Cessna Corvallis and a number of airplanes that are coming out today, the throttle is a vernier-type throttle, very similar to what we see on a number of mixture controls, where you have to actually push a button at the end of the throttle in order to move it quickly to the wall. This individual's hand, his right hand, was cupped over the throttle, and he was pulling aggressively. His intent was just to, I think, allow the airplane to settle back down, and my experience told me that if it did this, it was going to bounce hard or possibly even come down on its nose. So with as much force as I could muster, I pressed hard on his fisted hand over the throttle, but the throttle wouldn't move because he had the cup hand over the large button at the end of the throttle wouldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
And so unable to bring power in, all I could do at this point was to get the nose down, see if we could get a little bit of flying speed without, you know, stalling it in. And we did just that with the untoward outcome, however, is the airplane did land hard and the right gear collapsed on the grass, and we slid safely to a stop. But unfortunately, there was considerable damage to the aircraft. Now, what were the lessons? This is why I wrote about it, not to tell about my tale of woes, but at the end of this exercise, both the pilot and I kind of looked at each other and said, hey, what went wrong and where? The first thing that went wrong, in my opinion, and in his opinion, is while it was implied he was to be the PIC, I was to be the observer in conducting the flight review, it was not explicit in terms of a positive exchange of the controls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first lesson. Anytime two pilots get in the airplane, if one pilot has got to make it clear to the other pilot that if anything untoward happens, somebody's going to take charge of this airplane immediately, and there can be no second guessing of that when it happens. He thought, being the PIC, he was in charge at that moment that the airplane bounced. I, as the CFI, on the other hand, felt a responsibility, of course, to take charge. And so he was pulling and I was pushing and nothing was happening. Now, as I say this in public on air, I know that the responsibility of the CFI in a situation like this, of course, is always to anticipate any behavior on the part of the student, and to take charge. Now, in this particular case, lesson number two, with this type of throttle, which I think is a serious safety issue when it comes to instruction, if the instructor cannot get a hold of that throttle in a way that he needs to take control of the airplane, then we have a safety issue. Had I anticipated this particular problem, I should have been equipped with probably a 6D cell flashlight in my right hand. Being prepared to wrap his hand is difficult, as aggressively as necessary to break release of his hand on the throttle, take control, and save the day. Now that was lesson number two. that's above and beyond, I think, what, most flight instructors would be expected to do. But nonetheless, we have to be prepared to take over in an incident like that. So these are two things that we learned from this lesson. I think there are other things, that needed to be taken care of. The third lesson, of course, that pilots need to understand, any pilot, is anytime there is an unstabilized landing, anytime that the landing is not safely assured, what's the proper response?
Go around.
And had the student, been properly taught initially, had he had the required skill sets that he should have had, he would have known himself that just as soon as that airplane bounced the way it did, he should have applied power and go around. This was not a student. This was a pilot with some 30 years of flying experience. To say that I expected him to do that would be for me to transfer the blame to him. No, I'm not trying to do that, Paul. I'm the CFI on board the airplane. But stuff happens. And this is something that maybe we all should just stop and think about before we get into any airplane, certainly before we set up for landing. You know, tell yourself, be spring-loaded. In fact, assume a go-around, and then if everything happens the way it should, then surprise yourself with a safe landing.
Well, Bob, let me ask you this question. Does this cross your mind when you agree to do a flight review in a student who brings an airplane with which you're not familiar, or especially RANS makes both factory-built and kit aircraft, but if you've never flown in one, do you think twice about doing a flight review? Did this change your perspective on that?
I do, and I think I have changed my perspective on that. I have to assume that I have complete proficiency in any airplane that I do a flight review in, and that's not always possible. People come, you know, with Stardusters. They come with any version of home-built airplanes, and no flight instructor, I don't care who he is, can claim to be proficient in. In fact, we have our light sport aircraft in our flight school here, but we have a designated pilot examiner that we use regularly who has no experience in a light sport aircraft, and we need him to do flight checks for us. So he's been coming out to the airport on his own at his expense and learning our airplane, our light sport airplane, before he presumes to do a flight check in it. And that's responsible behavior. In fact, we have an ops inspector from the FAA is coming over now from the local FISDO to fly in our light sport airplane to develop some proficiency so that he can do 709 rides or whatever he thinks he needs to do down the road in this airplane. So to answer your question, Paul, yes. For me to do another flight review or for me to function as a CFI in an unfamiliar airplane, I am thinking twice.
Bob, we need to break here, but when we come back, I want to lean on your experience flying into Oshkosh for a minute. My guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home.
had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. All right, now, Bob, the NOTAM for Oshkosh has been out for a while. I didn't want to get out today before asking you if you have any last-minute tips for first-time flyers into Oshkosh.
Two words. Read it. Read the NOTAM. You know, all of us, many of us have been going out there year after year after year. We probably know the NOTAM by heart, but things change. Read the NOTAM carefully, number one. Number two, if you're going with somebody and you're deciding upon who's sitting where in the airplane, put your most experienced pilot passenger in the right seat so that you have two eyes, four eyes, and even passengers, alert them to be looking out the window. Number three, sterile cockpit. By all means, sterile cockpit. You know, we're all excited. We see the grounds appearing in the windscreen. We're getting excited about meeting friends we haven't seen for a year. It's a wonderful, thrilling event. But if we allow the excitement of the moment to detract from the business of flying the airplane, and I don't mean so much flying the airplane, but seeing and avoiding other traffic. Number four, assume the other guy is not as good as you are. In the air, and I mean that seriously because he likely isn't. We have far too many, and I don't want to discourage pilots from going into Oshkosh. I think it's a wonderful experience for all of us to do. But expect the unexpected. Somebody will pull out in front of you. Somebody will do something stupid. So it's defensive flying at its best. But if you read the NOTAM, heads up, allow adequate spacing between you and the airplane in front of you. Don't lose sight of him. It's going to be a wonderful experience, and everybody will make it in just fine.
Now, you have in the past, Bob, mentioned one other strategy for flying into Oshkosh that was two words, and that was file IFR.
Yeah, now that's a secret I don't want to get out, Paul. So, if you go in under instrument flight rules in VFR conditions, the NOTAM calls for us to cancel our IFR, 30 miles out, 50 miles out, and then proceed in line with everybody else. And that's the standard procedure. So I think the absolute best way to go into Oshkosh and obey all the rules, of course, is to file IFR and then receive radar vectors to the final approach course and land as you would under any normal IMC landing situation. Here again, filing under instrument flight rules, you have a lot more help getting in. But the system would bog down if everybody did that way. I mean, it would really slow things down.
All right. Well, Bob, I look forward to sharing a picnic table with you and a meal over at Camp Scholar in a few days. And thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you again on Monday.
Yes, and to all of our other listeners, Paul, we are at Camp Scholar 46 in Lindbergh. If anybody cares to stop by our big tent, EAA 46, love to talk with you.
Bob Miller publishes Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. You can read the current edition and subscribe free to receive future editions at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.